she said quietly. My hand hurts so much. It's fine, Valeria said in a tone that said it was not. She's so unfair, Repin said. So cruel to us. We are supposed to be her advisors, and she treats us like servants, and tells us nothing, not a word of what she plans now that she has dragged us to this horrid place. This is not what Symph intended for us. Valeria relented in her sulk. There's a road over there. I think we should follow it. It makes no sense to stay here. Perhaps it goes to a village, Repin offered hopefully. She added in a softer voice, I need a healer. My whole arm throbs. All of you, go fetch wood! Dwalia shouted from her seat by the dwindling fire. Vindelire looked up with a woeful face. I saw Repin and Alaria exchange rebellious glances. I said all of you! Dwalia shrieked. Vindelire came to his feet and stood uncertainly. Dwalia stood up, a much-folded paper in her hand. She looked at it angrily, gripped it so tightly that I knew it was the source of her ire. That liar! She growled. I should have known. I should not have trusted a word that we wrung from Prilkop. Abruptly she slapped Vindelire with her paper. Go! Get wood! We will be here another night at least. Alaria, Repin, take B with you. Watch her. We need firewood. Lots of it. You, Chael Sedion, go hunt for some food for us. Kerf did not even turn his head. He was perched on a low stone wall and looking across the square at nothing. Nothing until I eased my walls down and saw tumblers, clad all in black and white, performing for a crowd of tall folk with oddly coloured hair. Sounds of a busy market day filled my ears. I squeezed my eyes shut, firmed my walls, and opened my eyes to the long deserted plaza. For that was what it was. Once, this open space in the forest had been a lively market square, a crossroads, where traders met to exchange wares and elderlings gathered for amusement and shopping. Come on! Valeria snapped at me. I got slowly to my feet. If I walked hunched over, my belly did not hurt so badly. Eyes on the ground, I followed them as they crossed the ancient paving stones. I saw bear scat among the sparse forest debris, and then a glove. I slowed my pace. Another lady's glove, this one of soft yellow kid, then some sodden canvas. Something red and knitted peeped out from beneath it. Slowly and carefully, I stooped and tugged out a red woolen shawl. It was as damp and smelly as the hat I'd found, but just as welcome. What do you have there? Dwalia demanded, and I flinched. I hadn't heard her come up behind me. Just a rag, I said, my words blurred by my swollen mouth. There's a lot of rubbish over here, Repin observed. Which shows that people use this road, Valeria added. She looked toward Dwalia as she said, If we followed it, we might soon come to a village, and a healer for Repin. There's bear scat, too, I contributed, and it's fresher than the rubbish. That last part was true. The excrement was on top of some of the canvas and unmelted by rain. Ew! Valeria had been tugging at a corner of some canvas. She dropped it and sprang back. What's that? Dwalia exclaimed and pushed her aside. She squatted down and peeled the canvas back from the wet stones to expose something white and cylindrical. A bone? Umph! She exclaimed in satisfaction. We all watched as she unscrewed a small plug from the end and coaxed out a coiled piece of parchment. What is it? Valeria asked. Go get wood! Dwalia snapped and took her treasure back to the fireside. Move, bee! Valeria commanded me. I hastily wrapped my shawl around my shoulders and followed them. For the rest of the morning they broke sticks from storm-fallen branches and piled them in my arms for me to carry back to the campsite. Dwalia remained crouched by the fire, brow furrowed over the little scroll she'd found. I'm going to die here, Repin announced. She was huddled under her coat and mine, her bitten arm cradled in her lap. "Don't be dramatic!" Dwalia snapped at her and went back to studying her papers, squinting as the light faded from the day. It had been 2 days since I'd bitten Repin, and here we still were. Dwalia had forbidden Alaria from exploring any farther down the old roads, and had slapped Repin for asking what we would do next. Since she had found the bone cylinder and discovered the parchment inside it, all she had done was sit by the fire and compare it with her crumpled paper. She scowled and squinted as her gaze moved from one to the other. I stared at Repin across the fire. The sun was going down, and the cold was creeping back. The small amount of warmth the stones of the old plaza had captured would soon flee. Repin probably felt colder because of her fever. I kept my mouth flat. She was right. She would die. Not quickly, but she would die. Wolf Father had told me, and when I let him guide my senses, I could smell the infection in her sweat. "Next time, for a faster kill, you must find and bite a place where the blood leaps forth in gushes. But for a first kill, you did well, even if this is meat you cannot eat." I didn't know my bite could kill her. "No regrets," Wolf Father chided me. "There is no going back to do a thing or not do a thing. There is only today. Today you must resolve to live. Each time you are given a choice, you must do the thing that will keep you alive and unhurt. Regrets are useless. If you had not made her fear you, she would have done you many more hurts, and the others would have joined in. They are a pack, and they will follow their leader. You made the bitch fear you, and the others know that. What she fears, they will fear." So I kept my face set and showed no remorse, though I did suspect that the prescription against eating humans had not been made by someone as hungry as I was. In the 2 days that had passed since we'd arrived, I'd eaten twice, if a thin soup of some bird Alaria had killed with a thrown stone, and 2 handfuls of meal cooked in a full pot of water could be counted as food. The others had eaten better than I had. I had wanted to be too proud to eat the little they offered me, but Wolf Father said that was a poor choice. "Eat to live," he had told me. "Be proud of staying alive." And so I tried. I ate what I was given, spoke little, and listened much. By day, they untied my hands and hobbled my ankles so I could help with the endless task of scavenging for firewood. My new bonds had been made from strips torn from my tunic. I dared not chew them again, lest they tear away even more of my clothing. They watched me closely. If I strayed at all from Alaria's side, Dwalia would hit me with a stick. Every night she bound my wrists to my tied ankles and tethered them to her wrist. If I shifted in my sleep, she kicked me. Hard. And with every kick, Wolf Father would snarl, "Kill her. As soon as possible." "You and I are the only ones left," Repin whispered that night to Alaria after Dwalia slept.
"I am here,"
Vindalaya reminded them. "Of the true Lurix," Repin clarified disdainfully. "You are no scholar of the Dream Skull. Stop spying on us." She lowered her voice as if to exclude Vindalaya.
"Remember when Simph herself said we were chosen as the best to help Dwalia discern the path? But from the beginning, she ignored our advice. We both know that girl has no value."
She sighed.
"I fear we have strayed very far from the way."
Alaria sounded uncertain as she said, "But B did have the fever and the skin change. That must mean something."
"Only that she has some white heritage, not that she can dream. Certainly not that she is this unexpected son that Dwalia claimed we would find."
Repin dropped her voice to a whisper.
"You know she is not. Even Dwalia no longer credits that. Alaria, we must protect each other. No one else will. When Simph and Dwalia proposed this mission, Capra and Coltrane both insisted that we had already endured the unexpected sun, that he was the one who freed Icefire and put an end to Illistor. So Beloved told us when he came back to Clarys. He said that one of his catalysts, the noble assassin, was the unexpected sun. Among his people, they called Illistor the Pale Woman, and she was defeated by the unexpected sun. All know that. Three of the four say that the dreams related to him are fulfilled, and those prophecies should be discarded now. Only Simph thought otherwise, and Dwalia.
I held my breath. They were speaking of my father. I knew from poring through his papers that the fool had said he was the unexpected son, but I had never grasped that in some far-off land he had been the fulfillment of a prophecy. Furtively, I edged closer. Repin dropped her voice.
Simph believed her only because Dwalia showered her with obscure references that said the unexpected son's victory would be absolute. And it was not, because Beloved came back to us and was recaptured. And remember that Dwalia served Illistor for years and was infatuated with her. Dwalia always bragged that when Illistor returned, she would raise her to power.
She barely breathed the next words.
I think Dwalia only wants vengeance. You recall how she was about Beloved. She holds him responsible for Illistor's death. And you know whose home we stole B from? Fitz Chivalry's.
Alaria sat up in her blankets.
No! Yes! Fitz Chivalry Farsia!
Repin reached up to tug her back down.
Think back. Recall the name Beloved shouted when his foot was being crushed? The name of his true catalyst. He'd held that back, saying he'd had many. An assassin? A nine-fingered slave boy? A ship's captain? A spoiled girl? A noble bastard? Not true. His one real catalyst was Fitzchivalry Farsia, and when I followed Dwalia into that house, in a room full of scrolls, she stopped still and stared and smiled, and there, on a mantelpiece, I saw a carving. One of the faces on it was Beloved's. As he looked before he was interrogated.
She nestled deeper into their bedding.
She wanted to take it, but just then Elik's men came in and began to push over shelves and throw things around. They took a sword from there, so we left. But that's who B is, the daughter of a catalyst.
They said the house belonged to Badgerlock, Tom Badgerlock. B said that was her father's name.
So, you are surprised that the biting little bitch lies? But she is a white, too.
Alaria's whisper was soft. I strained to hear Repin's reply.
Yes, and think now how such a thing as that could come to be.
Her words were triumphantly scandalized, as if my very existence were shameful. Vindalaya is listening. Alaria cautioned her. She shifted, pulling the coat more closely around them. I don't care about such things. I just want to go home. Back to Clarys. I want to sleep in a bed and have breakfast waiting for me when I wake. I wish I'd never been chosen for this.
My hand hurts so badly I'd like to kill that brat.
Don't talk like that,
Vindalaya warned them.
You shouldn't talk at all. It's your fault, all of this.
Repin hissed at him.
Sneaking spy.
Alaria rebuked him, and they all fell silent. It was not the only time they whispered at night, though most of what they said made little sense to me. Repin complained of her bite, and they discussed the politics of Clarys, with names I did not know and fine points I could not understand. They promised to report all they had suffered when they returned home and agreed that Dwalia would be punished. Twice they spoke of dreams about a destroyer whom Alaria claimed would bring screaming and foul fumes and death. In one, an acorn brought into a house suddenly grew into a tree of flames and swords. I recalled my own dream of the puppet with the acorn head and wondered if there was any connection. But I had also dreamed of a nut bobbing in a stream.
I decided that my dreams were very confusing, almost as bad as Repin's, for she had dreamed just darkness, and a voice that announced,
"Comes the destroyer that you have made."
I gleaned what facts I could from their whispering. Some important people had not agreed about allowing Dwalia to go forth on her mission. When she persisted, they had relented, but only because Beloved had escaped. From my father's writings, Beloved was also the Fool, and Lord Golden. The Four had warned Dwalia of what would befall her if she failed to produce results. She had promised to deliver to them the unexpected son, and I was all she had. Vindalaya was excluded from their discussions, but he so craved their attention that he had no pride. One night, as they whispered under their furs, he broke in excitedly to say,
"I had a dream too."
"You did not," Repin declared.
"I did."
He was as defiant as a child.
"I dreamed that someone brought a small package into a room, and no one wanted it. But then someone opened it, and flames and smoke and loud noises came out, and the room fell apart, all around everyone."
"You did not dream that," Repin exploded with disdain. "You are such a liar. You heard me talking about that dream and just repeated what you heard."
"I did not hear you say such a dream."
He was indignant. Alaria's voice was a low growl.
"You'd better not claim that dream with Dwalia, because I already told it to her. She will know you for what a liar you are and beat you with a stick."
"I did dream that,"
he whined.
"Sometimes whites dream the same. You know that."
"You are no white. You were born broken, you and your sister. You should have been drowned." I caught my breath at that and waited for Vindalaya to explode with fury. Instead, he fell silent. The cold wind blew, and the only thing we truly shared was misery and dreams. Even as a small child, I'd had vivid dreams and instinctively known they were important and should be shared. At home, I'd recorded them in my journal. Since the servants had stolen me, my dreams had grown darker and more ominous. I had neither spoken of them nor written them down. The unuttered dreams were lodged inside me like a bone in my throat. With every additional dream, the driving compulsion to speak them aloud or write them down became stronger. The dream images were confusing. I held a torch and stood at a crossroads under a wasp nest. A scarred little girl held a baby, and Nettle smiled at her, although both Nettle and the girl were weeping. A man burned the porridge he was cooking, and wolves howled in anguish. An acorn was planted in gravel, and a tree of flames grew from it. The earth shook, and the black rain fell and fell and fell, making dragons choke and fall to the earth with torn wings. They were stupid dreams that made no sense, but the urgency I felt to share them was like the need to vomit. I put my finger on the cold stone and pretended to write and draw. The pressure eased. I tilted my head up and looked at distant stars. No clouds. It was going to be very cold tonight. I struggled to wrap my shawl more warmly around me, to no avail. A third day passed, and a fourth. Dwalia paced and muttered and studied her documents. My bruises began to fade, but I still ached all over. The swelling over my eye had gone down, but one of my back teeth still felt loose. The split flesh on my cheekbone was mostly closed over now. None of them cared.
"Take me back through the stone," Repin demanded on the fourth evening. "Perhaps they could save me if we returned to the six duchies. At least I could die in a bed instead of in the dirt."
"Failures die in the dirt," Dwalia said without emotion.
Repin made a stricken sound and lay down on her side. She drew her legs up, treasuring her infected arm close. My disgust with Dwalia equaled my hatred in that moment. Alaria spoke quietly into the gathering dimness.
"We can't stay here. Where will we go? Why can't we follow this old road? It must lead somewhere. Perhaps it goes to a town, with warm shelter and food.
Dwalia had been sitting by the fire, holding her hands out to the warmth. She suddenly folded her arms across her chest and glared at Alaria.
Are you asking questions?
Alaria looked down.
I was just wondering.
She dared to lift her head.
Were not we Lurics meant to advise you? Were not we sent to help you find the true path and make correct decisions?
Her voice rose in pitch.
Coltrane and Capra did not wish you to go. They only allowed this because Beloved had escaped. We were to hunt him down and kill him, and then perhaps capture the unexpected son if Beloved had led you to him. But you let the Farseer take Beloved away so we could ransack his home. All that killing. Now we are lost in a forest with the useless girl you stole. Does she dream? No. What good is she? I wonder why you have brought us all here to die. I wonder if the rumor was true that Beloved did not escape, but was released by you and Simph.
Dwalia shot to her feet and stood over Alaria.
I am a Lyngstra. You are a young and stupid Lurik. If you want to wonder anything, wonder why the fire is dying. Go get more wood.
Alaria hesitated as if she would argue. Then she rose stiffly and walked reluctantly into the gathering gloom under the great trees. Over the last few days, we had gathered all the close dry wood. She would have to range deeper into the forest to find more. I wondered if she would come back. Twice Wolffather had noted a faint but foul smell on the air.
Bear,
he had cautioned me. I had been frightened.
He does not want to approach so many humans near a fire. But if he changes his mind, let the others shriek and run. You cannot run fast or far, so lie very still. And do not make a sound. It may be he will chase after the others.
But if he does not?
Lie still and don't make a sound.
I had not been reassured, and I hoped that Alaria would return and bring an armful of firewood with her.
You,
Dwalia said suddenly,
go with her.
You already tied my feet for the night,
I pointed out to her.
And my hands.
I tried to sound sullen. If she cut me free to go for wood, I was almost certain I could slip away in the gloom.
Not you. I'm not having you run off in the dark to die in the forest. Repin, fetch wood.
Repin looked incredulous.
I can barely move this arm. I can't fetch wood.
Dwalia stared at her. I thought she might order her to her feet. Instead, she just pursed her mouth.
Useless,
she said coldly, and then added,
Vindalaya, fetch wood.
Vindalaya rose slowly. He kept his eyes cast down, but I could read his resentment in the set of his shoulders as he wandered off in the same direction that Alaria had gone. Dwalia went back to doing what she did every evening. Studying the little scroll and the tattered paper. Earlier, she had spent hours circling the pillars at the edge of the plaza, her eyes going from the parchment she'd found to the runes and back again. Some of those markings I had seen in my father's papers in his study. Would she attempt another passage through the skill pillars? She had also made brief forays on the road in both directions and had returned shaking her head and irritable. I could not decide which I feared more, that she would drag us into the skill pillar, or starve us here. Across the plaza, Kerf was engaged in a boot-stomping dance. If I allowed myself, I could hear the music and see the elderlings who danced all about him. Alaria returned with some frozen branches broken green from trees. They might burn, but would give little warmth. Vindalaya came behind her, carrying a broken piece of rotted log, more moss than wood. As they approached the fire, Kerf danced a foot-stamping jig around them.
Go away,
Alaria shouted at him, but he only grinned as he spun away to rejoin the festivities of the spectral elderlings. I did not like camping in the open ground of the plaza, but Dwalia thought the forest floor was dirty.
but dirt was much better than the smooth black stone of the plaza that gibbered and whispered to me constantly. Awake, I could keep my walls tight, though I was weary of the effort that took. But at night, when exhaustion finally claimed me, I was vulnerable to the voices stored in the stone. Their marketplace came alive with smoking meat over fragrant fires, and jugglers flipping sparkling gems, and one pale songster who seemed to see me. "Be strong, be strong, go where you belong," she sang to me, but her words more frightened than comforted me. In her eyes I saw her belief that I would do a terrible and wonderful thing, a thing only I could do. The Chalcedian abruptly dropped into place beside me. I jumped. My walls were so tight I had not been aware of his approach. "Danger," Wolf Father cautioned me. Kerf folded his legs and gave me a jaunty grin. "A fine night for the festival," he said to me. "Have you tried the smoked goat? Excellent." He pointed across the plaza at the darkening forest. "From the vendor with the purple awning." Madness made him such a congenial fellow. His mention of food made my stomach clench. "Excellent," I said quietly, and looked aside, thinking that agreeing might be the swiftest way to end the conversation. He nodded gravely and walked his haunches a bit closer to the fire, holding his grimy hands toward the warmth. Even mad, he had more sense than Repin. A rag torn from his shirt bandaged the finger I'd bitten. He opened the sturdy leather pouch at his belt and rummaged in it. "Here," he said, and thrust a stick at me. I lifted my bound hand to fend it off, and he pushed it into my fingers. I suddenly smelled meat. Jerky. The rush of hunger and the flood of saliva in my mouth shocked me. My hands shook as I lifted it to my mouth. It was dry and so hard I could not bite off a piece. I chewed and sucked on it, and found myself breathing hard as I tried to gnaw off a piece I could swallow.
"I know what you did."
I clutched the stick of jerky harder, fearful he would take it from me. I said nothing. Dwalia had lifted her gaze from her papers and was scowling at us. I knew she would not try to take the jerky from me for fear of my teeth. He patted my shoulder.
"You tried to save me. If I had let go when you bit me, I would have stayed there with beautiful Shun. I understand that now. You wanted me to stay behind, to protect her and win her."
I kept chewing the jerky, to get as much of it as I could into my belly before anyone could take it from me. Belatedly, I nodded at him. Let him believe whatever he wished if it meant he would give me food. He sighed as he gazed at the night.
"I think we are in the realm of death. It is very different from what I expected. I feel cold and pain, but I hear music and see beauty. I do not know if I am punished or rewarded. I do not know why I am still with these people instead of judged by my ancestors."
He gave Dwalia a gloomy look.
"These folk are darker than death. Perhaps that is why we are lodged here, halfway down death's throat."
I nodded again. I'd managed to tear a bit of the meat free and was chewing it to shreds. I had never so greatly anticipated swallowing anything. He twisted away from me and fumbled at his belt. When he turned back, a large gleaming knife was in his hand. I tried to scrabble back from him, but he caught my tied feet and pulled them to him. The knife was sharp. It slid through the twisted fabric, and suddenly my ankles were free. I kicked free of his grip. He reached toward me.
"Now your wrists," he said. "Trust or not?"
That knife could take off a finger just as easily as cut my bonds. I stuffed the stick of meat into my mouth and gripped it with my teeth. I held out my wrists to him.
"This is tight. It hurts?"
"Don't answer." I met his gaze silently.
"Your wrists have swelled up around it."
He slid the blade carefully between my hands. It was cold.
"Stop that! What are you doing?"
Dwalia finally voiced her outrage. The Chalcedian barely spared her a glance. He took one of my hands to study his task and began sawing through the rag that bound them. Dwalia surprised me. She had been in the act of adding a stick to the fire. Instead, she took two steps and clouted the Chalcedian on the back of his head. He went down, the knife still clutched in his hand. I tore my hands free of the last shred of rag and shot to my feet. I ran 2 steps on my buzzing feet before she seized me by the back of my collar, choking me. Her first 2 clouts with the stick were on my right shoulder and right ribs. I twisted in her grasp, ignoring how it tightened the chokehold she had on me, and kicked her as hard as I could, hitting her shin and then her knee. She shrieked with pain, but did not let me go. Instead, she struck the side of my head with her stick of firewood. My crushed ear rang and I tasted blood, but the pain did not matter so much as the way my vision was shrinking. I spun away from her, but that allowed her to hit me on the other side of my head. Dimly, I knew she was shouting at the others to seize me. No one leapt to help her. Vindalaya was moaning, "Don't! Don't! Don't!" His voice going higher each time he said the word. It angered me that he would moan, but do nothing. I pushed my pain at him. She hit me on the side of my head again, smashing my ear. My knees folded, and suddenly I was hanging by my collar. She was not strong enough to support my weight. She collapsed on top of me, and my shoulder exploded with pain. I felt a wave of emotion. It was like when Nettle and my father merged their minds, or when my father's mind was boiling with thoughts, and he had forgotten to hold them in.
"Don't hurt her! Don't hurt her!"
Dwalia let go of my collar and made a strange sound as she rolled off me. I didn't try to move, I just breathed, pulling air back into my body. I'd lost the jerky, my mouth was full of blood. I turned my head and opened my lips to let it run out.
"Don't die. Please don't die and leave me alone."
Vindalaya's thought whispered to me. Oh, that was it. When I'd pushed my pain at him, I'd opened a way for his thoughts to come in. Dangerous. With every bit of willpower I could muster, I blocked him from my mind. Tears stung my eyes, tears of fury. Dwalia's calf was within reach of my teeth. I wondered if I could bite a piece of meat off her leg.
"Don't, cub. She still has the stick. Crawl away. Quietly. This is one you don't attack until you are sure you can kill her."
I tried to wriggle away, but my arm wouldn't obey me. It flopped uselessly. I was broken. I blinked at the pain and little black spots danced in front of my eyes. Dwalia got to her hands and knees and then stood up with a grunt and walked away without looking at me. When she reached the other side of the fire, she sat down on the pack again and resumed looking at her much-folded paper and the little scroll she had taken from the bone. Slowly she rotated the pieces of paper, then suddenly leaned closer to them. She set them side by side on her knees and looked from one to the other. The Chalcedian sat up slowly. He reached around to the back of his head, brought his hand before his eyes, and rubbed his wet fingertips together. He watched me sit up and shook his head at my flopping, useless arm. "It's broken," I whispered. I desperately wanted someone to care that I was hurt so badly.
"Darker than death," he said quietly.
He reached over and put his fingers on the point of my shoulder and prodded it. I yelped and flinched away.
"Not broken," he observed, "but I don't know your word for it."
He made a fist and clasped it in his other hand. Then he pulled his fist out.
"Popped out," he told me.
He reached toward me again, and I cowered away, but he only waved at my shoulder.
"Popped out."
"My arm won't move."
Panic was rising in me. I couldn't get a breath.
"Lie down. Be still. Be loose. Sometimes it goes back in."
He looked over at Dwalia.
"She's a wasp," he observed.
I stared at him. He smiled sickly.
"A Chalcedian saying, if the bee stings, it dies. It pays a price to hurt you. A wasp can bite and bite and bite again. It pays nothing for the pain it brings."
He shrugged.
"So they bite. They know nothing else."
Dwalia suddenly shot to her feet.
"I know where we are now."
She looked back at the small scroll in her hands.
"The runes match. It makes no sense, but it must be so."
She stared into the distance. Then her eyes narrowed and her features changed as she realized something.
He lied to us. He lied to me.
Dwalia roared. I had thought she was frightening when she was angry, but outraged was far worse.
He lied to me. A market square, Prilkop claimed, on a well-traveled road. He thought he was so clever. He tricked me into bringing us here. He tricked me!
This last she screamed, her face contorted into a stark mask.
Prilkop!
Spit flew out of her mouth.
Always so condescending, so calmly superior. And beloved, so silent, and then babbling, babbling, babbling lies. Well, I made him scream. I tore the truth out of both of them, didn't I?
Apparently not. Alaria breathed the words, looking at the space between her feet and the fire. I doubt anyone heard her besides me. But Repin's head twitched as if she had, and she tried to sit up straight. You thought you did. You thought you ripped the truth out of his flesh, but he was stronger than you, wasn't he? Cleverer. Prilkop tricked you into bringing us here, and here we are in the middle of the wilderness, starving, dying. Her voice cracked. Dwalia stared at Repin, her eyes flat. Then she crushed the yellow map between her hands, stood up, and thrust it into the pack she'd been sitting on. The little scroll she had found, she rolled up and slid back into the tube. She flourished it at Repin.
Not all of us, Repin, not all of us will die here.
Her smile widened with pride.
I've deciphered it. Prilkop lied to me. But the true path is not to be defied.
She dug deeper into the pack and pulled out a small pouch, unwound the ties that secured it, and withdrew a delicate glove. Wolffather growled within me. I stared, feeling ill and not knowing why. Dwalia worked the glove slowly and carefully onto her hand, settling each fingertip into place. She had used it before when she had dragged us through the skill pillar. She stood up.
Bring the packs and the captive. Follow me.
The captive. My new title flowed over me like greasy water. Dwalia did not look back to see if they were obeying. She carried only her superiority as she strode to one of the pillars and studied the markings on it. Where does it go? Alaria asked timidly.
That's not for you to worry about.
The Chalcedian had followed Dwalia. He was the only one who did. I shifted away from the fire. My hands were free, my feet untied. They tingled with dwindling numbness in contrast with the roaring pain in my shoulder. Could I stand and run? I pushed with my good hand braced on the ground and moved my aching body a bit closer to the darkness. If I could slowly edge into the darkness, I might be able to crawl away. Repin had staggered to her feet and was trying one-handed to pick up my coat from the ground. I don't know if I can carry a pack, she apologized. No one responded. Ignoring Dwalia's scowl, the Chalcedian stepped up beside her to regard the pillar. He reached out and traced the carved runes.
I know this one,
he said, and smiled oddly.
I knelt almost upon it and had nothing else to stare at. I was six. We kept a vigil for my grandfather's body in the chamber of toppled doors in the Duke of Chalced stronghold. It was an honor for my grandfather's body to be exposed in such a place. The next day, they burned his body on a pyre near the harbor.
Dwalia snapped her stare back to him and smiled.
This was in Chalced, wasn't it?
He nodded.
It was half a day's ride from my family's holding there. The Duke's stronghold is said to be built on the site of an ancient battle. There were four pillars such as this one, all dragged down to the earth, sunken to be flush with the floor of the chamber. It is said to be good luck if you can break a chip from one to carry as a token. I tried, but the stone was as hard as iron. Her smile broadened. As I thought, we are still on the true path, my Lurix. I am certain of it, when such good fortune smiles upon us.
She tapped the little scroll tube against her palm.
Fate has delivered a map into my hands. It's oddly drawn, and the writing is foreign, but I have puzzled it out. I know where we are on this map, and now I know that this pillar can transport us to Chaelsed. Kerf will take us to his family's holding and introduce us as his friends. His family will give us supplies for our journey home.
She swung her stare to Vindalaya.
Won't he, Vindalaya?
Kerf looked astounded. Vindalaya, carrying one pack on his shoulders and dragging another, looked weary and uncertain. The firelight shifted on his features, making him first an adoring servant, and then a beaten dog.
My family will do that?
Kerf asked in wonder.
You will speak for us,
Dwalia assured him. I scooted myself a little farther away from the fire. I could barely stand the pain of my popped shoulder when I moved. I cradled my useless arm with my good one, wondering how bad the pain would be if I staggered to my feet and tried to run. I can't lift my coat, Repin told no one at all.
No.
Kerf shook his head.
I cannot speak for you to my family. I cannot even speak for myself. They will want to know how I have survived and returned when so many of my comrades are missing. They will think I have fled battle and left my war brothers to die. They will despise me.
Dwalia fixed her smile in place, put her ungloved hand on his arm, and gave Vindalaya a sideways glance.
I am sure your family will welcome us when you speak for us. I am sure they will feel only pride in you.
I kept my eyes fixed on them as I edged into darkness. The pain from my shoulder made me want to vomit. I watched Vindalaya's face slacken as his thoughts went elsewhere. I felt how desperately he pushed his thoughts onto Kerf as I heard the echo of a distant scream. I watched the Chaelsedian scowl fade as he gazed at Dwalia. Repin had given up trying to pick up my coat from the ground. Empty-handed, she tottered over to where the others stood. There she made a knowing smile and nodded to herself as Vindalaya worked his magic, but no one took any notice of her. I bent my knees and pushed myself deeper into darkness.
My family will surely welcome you. All we own will be put at your disposal,
Kerf told Dwalia. His smile was warm with certainty.
Aleria, bring her.
Dwalia looked not at me, but beyond me. I turned my head. The evil delight on Alaria's face was chilling. All this time, as I'd kept watch on Dwalia and tried to move away from the firelight, she had been behind me. Now or never, I pushed hard with my good hand and managed to gain my feet, my useless arm clutched to my belly.
I ran.
I took three strides before Alaria caught me. She grabbed my hair and kicked my leg as if she'd been waiting her whole life for that moment. I shrieked. She shook my head by my hair as a fox shakes a rabbit, and then flung me aside. I landed on my bad shoulder, flashes of red and flashes of black. I could not find air to breathe. I could do nothing when she seized the back of my shirt and dragged me almost to my feet.
Walk, she shouted at me. Walk, or I'll kick you again.
It was hard to obey and impossible to defy her. She was bigger and stronger than me, and hadn't been beaten recently. She kept her grip on my garments and held me too high. We were halfway to Dwalia, me struggling to balance on my toes, when I realized that my shoulder was a dull red ache, but I could move my arm again.
so I had that.
By the pillars, Dwalia was arranging her ducklings to her liking.
I will go first,
she announced, as if anyone else could have.
I will grip Vindalaya's hand, and he will hold Kerf's.
She smiled warmly at the nodding Chael Sedien, and I understood. Those were the two most important to her own survival. She wished to be certain her magic man and the warrior with a home in Chael Sed arrived with her.
Then the brat. Kerf, hold it tight to her, not her hand. Remember that she bites. Grab the back of her neck, that's right. Elaria, you are last. Take her by her upper arm and hold tight.
This Elaria was pleased to do, and I could only be weakly glad that it was not my bad shoulder. Kerf gripped the back of my neck, and any kindliness he previously had shown toward me was gone. He was Vindalaya's puppet again.
Wait, am I last?
Repin demanded. Dwalia looked at her coldly.
You are not last. You are unnecessary. You would not fetch the firewood. You chose to be useless. Elaria, go fetch that coat. It may be worth money, in Chael said. And the Repin's pack.
Repin's eyes were huge in her wan face as Elaria released me and ran to obey. The Chael Sedian's grip on me was sure. Elaria moved swiftly. Did she wish to show how useful she was? In a moment, she was back, Repin's pack slung over one shoulder, and the heavy coat that once had been white and mine draped over her arm. She seized my upper arm in a pinching grip.
You can't leave me here. I need my pack. Don't leave me.
Repin's pale face was cadaverous in the light of the fire. Her bitten arm was curled to her chest. She pawed at Elaria, trying to seize Elaria's free hand with her good one. Elaria turned her face away from her and clutched my former coat to her chest, curling her hand out of Repin's reach. Her grip on my arm tightened. I wonder if she hardened her heart to leave Repin, or if it was a relief. Perhaps she was simply glad that she wasn't the one being abandoned. I saw now how Dwalia ruled. Cruelty to one of her followers meant the others could breathe more easily for a moment. There was no loyalty between Lurics, only fear of Dwalia and desire for what she might bestow on them.
Please!
Repin shrieked to the night. Vindalaya made a small sound. For an instant, his concentration was broken and Kerf's grip on my neck loosened.
She's useless, Dwalia growled. She's dying, she's whining, and she's consuming resources that are already scarce. Don't question my decisions, Vindalaya. Look what happened to all of us the last time you did not obey my commands. Look how many dead, and all your fault. Pay attention to me and hold tight, or you too will be left behind.
Kerf's grip on me tightened, and Elaria's fingers ground the flesh of my arm against the bone. I suddenly grasped the danger.
We should not do this. We should follow the road. It must go somewhere. The standing stones are dangerous. We may not come out, or we may emerge as mad as Kerf.
My shouted warnings went unheeded. Dwalia pressed her gloved hand to the stone's carved face. It seemed to draw her in like a slice of ginger sinking into warm honey. The light from our abandoned campfire showed her sliding into the stone. Vindalaya followed, panting with terror as his hand, his wrist, his elbow vanished into stone. He whined as he was drawn in.
We swim with the dead ones,
Kerf shouted, grinning his madman's grimace.
On to the fallen palace of a dead duke.
He seemed to enter the pillar more slowly than Vindalaya had, as if the stone resisted him. I hung back, but his grip on my neck stayed tight, even when the rest of him had vanished into the stone. I looked up as I was dragged toward the pillar and lost my breath in horror at what I saw. The additional marking on the stone was not new. It was not scored as deeply into the stone as the original runes, but there was no mistaking its intent. Someone had deliberately marked a deep, straight scratch through the rune as if to forbid or warn anyone who chose to use that face of the portal.
Da!
I cried out a desperate call that no one could hear.
Da! Help me!
In the next moment, my cheek touched the cold surface, and I was pulled into tarry blackness.
Chapter 4. Chael said,
"Because of our studies of many old scrolls, including translations we have done, I am convinced that the legendary elderlings of our myths and legends were a very real people who occupied a large territory for many generations before their cities and culture eventually fell into decay, long before Buckkeep Castle was founded. Additional information gained from a library of what we call skill cubes has only convinced us that we are correct. Why did the elderlings, a people of wisdom and powerful magic, fail and disappear from our world? Can we tie that failing to the vanishing of the dragons, another event for which we have no explanation? And now that both dragons and perhaps elderlings have returned to the world, how does that affect the future of humankind? And what of our legends of an ancient alliance between Farseer and elderlings, the very alliance that King Verity sought to revive when he led his expedition to the Rain Wilds? Were they living elderlings he encountered, or the stored memories of what they had been? Questions that we may find the answers to if we continue to mine the memory cubes for information."
Vanishing Elderlings, Shade Fullstar.
"My mother used to do this to me when she wanted to move me."
A dim recollection. A den, a mother who carried me by the scruff of my neck. Not my thought, but it was a thought and the first one I had. Someone gripped hair, skin, and shirt collar. The collar was the part that was choking me. I was dragged up and out of a mire as someone protested, "There isn't room! Leave her! There isn't room!" The blackness was absolute. Air on my face. I blinked my eyes to see if they were truly open. They were. No stars, no distant firelight. Nothing. Just dark. And something thick trying to pull me back down. I was abruptly glad for the choking grip on my collar. In panic, I clutched one-handed at someone's shirt and crawled up and on to Kerf. He was prone on his side beneath me. I lifted my head and it hit against something. Worse, someone had hold of my arm and was pulling on it as they crawled up to join me. The man beneath me shifted onto his back. I fell off him to lie wedged between him and a stone wall. It was a snug fit, and instinctively I pushed at him, trying to gain more room. But I could not move his bulk, and I heard Elaria gasp, and then utter small shriek after shriek as she scrabbled up to take my place on top of Kerf. The shriek turned into gasped words. "Let go! Let go of me!" She was thrashing on top of Kerf.
"You're kicking me!"
Vindalaya protested.
"Let go!"
Elaria cried.
"I'm not touching you! Stop kicking!"
Dwalia ordered her.
"Vindalaya, get off me!"
"I can't! I'm stuck! There's no room!"
He was panting with terror. Where were we? What had happened to us? Dwalia tried for a tone of command and failed. She was breathless.
"Silence! All!"
"I'm sick."
I heard Vindalaya gag.
"That was awful. They were all grabbing at me. I want to go home. I can't do this. I hate this. I need to go home."
He blubbered like a small child.
"Let go of me!"
Elaria, her voice gone shrill.
"Help me! I'm sinking! Please make room! I can't climb past you!"
I heard and smelled Repin.
The infection in her arm stank. She had probably broken the wound open in her struggle.
My arm! I can't climb out! Pull me up, someone! Don't leave me here! Don't leave me with them!
Where were we?
Be calm. Discover what has happened before you try to make a plan.
I felt Wolffather's sturdiness suffuse me. My breathing had become bellows in my chest, but his voice was so calm in my mind.
Listen. Touch. Smell. What can you discover?
It was hard to be calm with the slapping, panting struggle going on right beside me. Alaria begged,
"Let go! There's no room! Don't pull me back! Ah!"
Repin did not shriek. She gave a long moan that was suddenly quenched by a sound like a heavy stone pulled free from muck. Only Alaria's panting broke the silence.
She was pulled back down into the stone.
More a statement than a question from Dwalia, and with it I recalled that she had dragged us into a skill pillar.
I had to push her away. There's no more room. You said to leave her. It's not my fault.
Alaria sounded more defensive than sorry.
Be silent.
Dwalia's voice was still pinched with breathlessness.
I speak. Vindalaya, get off me. I am sorry. I am stuck here. Kerf pushed me onto you as he crawled up. I can't budge. A stone presses down on me.
He was on the edge of hysteria.
I am so sick, I cannot see. Am I blind? Lyngstor Dwalia, am I blind?
No, it is dark, you oaf. Don't dare vomit on me. You are crushing me. Give me room.
I heard a struggle of shifting bodies. Vindalaya whimpered.
There's no space for me to move. I am crushed too.
If you cannot be helpful, be still. Chalcedian?
She was gasping for air. Vindalaya was not a small person, and she was trapped beneath him.
Kerf!
He giggled. It was a terrible sound coming from a man's deep chest in the darkness.
Stop that! Dwalia, he's touching me!
Alaria was outraged and terrified. Kerf giggled again, and I felt him tug his arm from under me. He lifted it, giving me a tiny bit more room, and I surmised that he embraced Alaria against him.
Nice,
he said in a throaty voice, and I felt him lift his hips against her.
Stop,
she begged him, but his reply was a growl, followed by a low chuckle. The muscles of his upper arm were pressed against me, and I felt them tighten as he snugged Alaria closer to him. His breathing deepened. Beside me, he began a rhythmic shifting that shoved me solidly against the wall. Alaria began to weep.
Ignore him,
Dwalia ordered her coldly.
He's trying to rape me,
she squeaked.
He doesn't have enough room, so ignore him. He can't get his own trousers down, let alone yours. Pretend he's a little dog, infatuated with your leg.
Was there a cruel satisfaction in Dwalia's voice? Did she revel in Alaria's humiliation?
We are trapped here, and you are squawking about a man touching you? Scarcely a real danger.
Alaria responded with a frightened keening that kept pace with Kerf's thudding against her.
The girl, B, did she come through? Is she alive?
Dwalia demanded. I kept my silence. I had wriggled my sore arm free, and although my injured shoulder protested, I was groping to discover the confines of our prison. Stone beneath me. To the left of me, Kerf's body. To my right, a wall of stone as far as I could grope. When I reached up, I could brush my fingertips against more stone. It was worked stone, smooth as a polished floor. I explored with my feet. More stone. Even if I had been alone in this space, I could not have sat up.
Where were we?
The tempo of the Chalcedian's jerking was speeding up, and with it, his open-mouthed gasping.
Alaria, feel around. Did the girl come through?
She must have. Oh, I dragged myself through by holding on after her!
Laria's voice was going smaller and higher. The Chalcedian continued to heave himself.